And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, December 19th, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at Screening Room Kingston. In today's episode, we'll be covering a major update from Kingston Health Sciences Center in mental health and addiction care, a new campaign against intimate partner violence launched by community organizations, an innovative mental health resource created by four second-year Queen's students, and a few stories to get you into the holiday spirit.
Kingston Health Sciences Center has received $1.8 million in new funding from Ontario Health to expand services at its detoxification center. KHSC's Detox Center is the only publicly funded withdrawal management site between Ottawa and Oshawa, a crucial lifeline for people across eastern Ontario seeking recovery. Without it, many individuals would be left facing risky withdrawal at home, long wait times, or long-distance travel for support. The center currently operates as a level 2 medically supported model. With this new investment, it will transition to a level 3 detoxification site, offering 24-hour medical services. The funding will support several major enhancements, including 4 new medical support beds, 24/7 registered practical nurse coverage for continuous clinical oversight, a new nurse practitioner position for weekend coverage, and reclassification of all 22 existing beds as observation beds, allowing the center to fully operate them as intake-ready beds. KHSC's Executive Vice President of Patient Care and Chief Nursing Executive, Jason Hahn, spoke with CFRC about what this expansion means for addiction care across the region.
We now will have 24-hour medical management on site. So with this, we will be having registered practical nurses 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, as well as nurse practitioner support on the weekends, which is a great addition. So patients can present to the detoxification center, and it's voluntary presentation to the detoxification center for safely managed detoxification from alcohol or drugs. What this will provide is that we can medically monitor our patients. We can manage them through medications, through assessments. And when patients are detoxifying from alcohol or drugs, symptoms can be everything from, fever, chills. You can be quite anxious, restless, and agitated, up to and including delirium. And in some cases, you can have increased heart rate and cardiac symptoms. And what we're seeing is there's a lot more toxic drugs out there. And as a result, the withdrawal symptoms are much, much more severe. So this will really help us manage them medically. And what it really will help is, when they enter our detoxification center, they can stay with us. Prior to that, they would have to, if we were not able to manage them there, medically manage them at the detoxification center, they would either have to go to our emergency department at the KGH site to be managed, up to including an inpatient mission to one of our inpatient beds, say a medicine bed at KGH site, or to our mental health and addictions inpatient units. So really providing safe, trauma-informed addiction care and management at the detox center. And as a result of the funding, our goal is to increase the number of patients that we're going to care for in a year by 20%. And we care for about 760 patients now on an annual basis.
This upgrade comes at a critical time. The local drug supply is becoming increasingly toxic, and more clients are arriving at the hospital sicker and with more medical complications than ever before. Overall, KHSC says the enhanced services will help more people withdraw safely, reduce pressure on hospitals, and strengthen the region's addiction care system.
You know, as a result of going from a level two to a level three now with medical management 24/7. So we built capacity. We have regulated healthcare professionals that'll be on site 24/7. So we're able to provide the care for the patients that present there. So if, for example, in our current model, you know, we could have a patient that's detoxifying and you know, we're caring for them, but we're not able to medically manage them. So, for example, you know, they develop increased heart rate, they become quite agitated or delirious. We would have to transfer them to the emergency department at a KGH. That would include plus or minus an admission to an inpatient unit. So, you know, if you think about that, you know, you provide the care and we're able to improve access. So if you think about it being a voluntary detoxification center, so, you know, patients walk up to the door. I mean, you know, we always request if they call ahead just to make sure, but, you know, you could walk up and knock on the door and we're able to accept them. And at times now we're saying we don't have capacity and we're not able to manage you, but, you know, please go to the emergency department for care. So if you think about just, you know, providing care and compassionate care for the patients that are struggling with addiction, and addiction is a health issue. So, you know, patients and individuals with addictions to whether alcohol or drugs deserve compassionate, quality medical care.
KHSC hopes these changes will make it easier and safer for people to take that first, often hardest step toward recovery. To learn more about Kingston's Detoxification Center, located at 240 Brock Street, visit the KHSC website. Kingston community organizations are working together to address intimate partner violence in KFLNA through a new awareness campaign. See It, Name It, Change It is an educational campaign encouraging community members to learn to identify harmful behaviors, call them out, and take safe, effective action. The working group behind the campaign came together in 2024. After City Council declared intimate partner violence an epidemic in the region in 2023. The group is comprised of Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, Kingston Interval House, Resolve Counseling Services, Kingston Anti-Violence Advisory Council, Southeast Public Health, the City of Kingston, and United Way, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington. The local campaign features photographs of Kingston community members holding signs with the campaign slogan. The photographs, taken by local photographer Will O'Hare, feature an Indigenous elder, a musician, a paramedic, the medical officer of health, a trades worker, the local Canadian Forces Base Commander, a Correctional Services Canada Commissioner, an artist, and a Queen student. See It, Name It, Change It launched in conjunction with the Global 16 Days of Activism Against Gender-Based Violence, featuring the images and resources on social media and local digital displays. Ruth Nordegroff, Director of Community Development and Well-Being and IIDEA at the City of Kingston, sat down with CFRC to share more about the campaign. For listeners who may not have heard of it yet, what is the See It, Name It, Change It campaign, and what is it aiming to do?
It's actually a campaign that was initially created in the Lanark County. So we are, you know, not that creative. We really build it off their initial campaign. And it's really focused on really education around intimate partner violence and really call people or support people to take action. Obviously, it kind of focuses on not only identifying, but also calling out, changing, and ultimately stopping intimate partner violence in our community.
Mm-hmm. And the campaign uses photographs of community members holding that message. I was wondering why this approach was chosen and what impact you guys are hoping it has.
Well, we want to make sure that it really feels as something that is, you know, touching everybody and everybody should be part of. So we choose, like, obviously some folks that people might recognize in our community. You know, we've chosen, you know, leaders of different institutions, musicians, artists, but also folks that that work in, you know, certain professions like healthcare, trades, education. So we really wanted to make it like diverse and touch on everybody and hopefully also really create some, I would say, recognition in the community around this and starting a conversation.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned this has started in other cities. I was wondering if you could speak to why it was so important to bring this to Kingston now.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually something that we've been working on over the last few years. Obviously, I work for the City of Kingston and City Council back in 2023 actually declared intimate partner violence as an epidemic. There's about 100 municipalities that have done the same, and we're hopeful that at some point the province also will take that same approach. So we've, after that, really started to work on how do we bring all the partners together that work on preventing intimate partner violence and also supporting victims and members of the community. And we thought that this campaign would really be a good start to bring this message out in the community in an impactful way.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you've gotten any response, whether it's from folks who participated maybe in taking the pictures or folks who've seen the campaign.
Well, we launched it this week and we've definitely seen some responses on social media. People are really kind of picking this up in a positive way. What we really try to do as well is making sure that there's a link to resources. So if people see this campaign and they may want to learn more, that they actually go to the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence website, which has a survivor handbook and lots of other tools for people to educate themselves. So we've overall seen some positive reactions. We've received some questions around resources for all genders. So it's really good dialogue and conversation.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And where can folks find more about this campaign, view all these pictures, and find resources?
Well, hopefully on as many social media platforms as possible. We really hope it's kind of this opportunity for people to share and reshare these photos. But the different partners that have been working on this are the City of Kingston, the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence Coordinating Committee, Interval House, Resolve, the Southeast Health Units, and the United Way. So all those agencies will have these resources on their websites. But ultimately, we really hope that folks are going to the Kingston Frontenac Anti-Violence website, which has all the resources and tools.
Once again, that was Ruth Nordegroff with the City of Kingston on the See It, Name It, Change It campaign here in KFLNA. The working group hopes to expand the campaign to more locations in the coming months. For more information and resources, you can visit kfacc.org. Four Queen's students have launched a mental health tool designed just for students. CEDL.ca is a free, verified directory of supports for university campuses across the country. I sat down with the team to learn how it all started, what they discovered, and their hopes for the future.
My name is Yohanathan Chakargi. I am a second year in health sciences, and I'm responsible for the technology aspect within CEDL.
My name is Tobori Akpoyebe. I am also a second year of health science. I am responsible for marketing.
My name is William Wu. I'm also in second year health sciences, and my role is financially planning the events at CEDL.
My name is Sharmin Dabidian. I'm in second year of health sciences, and my role is with the operations of CEDL.
The idea for CEDL began in their first year at Queen's, when the group noticed the struggle that comes with navigating university life and mental health.
Essentially, last year, we all started university. And so we recognized that was kind of like a time where we had a bunch of new experiences, whether that be through meeting different peoples, different clubs. And so there's a lot of strain. A lot of the time you can get so immersed within like all the different learnings that you do, and you can kind of put your mental health on a back burner. And so we started talking a little bit, and we recognized it's much, much more common than you'd expect. And so we really wanted to do something about that. And that's where CEDL came from. We really thought, okay, if this is such a recurring problem, how can we make mental health resources more accessible to everybody, especially within the university context?
Each founder took on a role and built a platform that filters resources by category, identity-affirming supports, and more.
The first thing we thought about is making a directory. So essentially, having a place where you'd be able to really see all these resources, especially because you can more so grasp, okay, is there a disparity within this community? Like, can we address that as well? Beyond that, we started thinking, okay, how do we filter out these resources? So whether it's like a BIPOC resource or LGBTQ plus IA, or whether that be a specific type of support, crisis line, community counseling, we thought about filtering as well.
We have various different categories of resources on our website. We have like online resources and in-person resources. And the way that our website really works is that we have specific campuses across Canada that students can choose from. For example, Queen's University. And based off of that campus, there's different resources around them that they can have access to and that they will see. And if it's like an in-person resource, we have a feature where it says like how many kilometers that campus is away from that resource. We provide various different types of categories throughout our depository so that students can really go through these categories and pick a resource that's more tailored and catered towards their mental health needs.
The team says that students are uniquely vulnerable because of factors like workload and change in environment.
I think especially for students, we're always in such a busy time of our lives, whether it's clubs, making new friends, schoolwork, classes. It's always super busy and people really just put their mental health in the back of their mind. They don't really focus on it. They're just too busy with their work, with their life. Yes, we do all this work as students. Yes, we're so busy, but we also need to be happy with our lives. We need to make sure that we're doing something that we are happy with. And that's why mental health is so important, just to make sure that you are not only being successful, but also that you are happy with the state of life that you have.
The team also pointed to the stigma that comes with discussing mental health and the role of education and institutions in addressing this.
I think a big thing, a lot of the time there is this sort of stigma that's associated with mental health. Somebody could be perceived as weak in that regard because they are looking for that mental health. I think education plays such a fundamental role when it comes to that seeking of support. I think making different awareness campaigns and really just showing that, hey, this is an acceptable thing. You should be reaching out to support because, as Sherman mentioned, success, that's a part of your success in life. It's your whole quality of life is based on the way that you sort of see these things. And having that background and that level of support is so necessary. So I would definitely say when it comes to universities and campuses, more so making it more accessible and more known that, hey, this is totally an option and there's no stigma associated with it.
I was also going to say that's why CETL is so important in that manner and regards, because we provide that resource that universities can go ahead and share. It's really hard to gather these different resources and put them together in a depository, but we've already done that and provided it for the general population. So universities can then use CETL to kind of help educate others also about the different mental health support systems and resources that exist throughout Canada.
While mapping resources across the country, the team uncovered some gaps, especially in Northern and Indigenous communities.
I think there's a diverse variety of resources available for many like students in universities, such as like in Ontario and like British Columbia, for example, but like other provinces and territories, especially the Northern territories, there's a huge like disparity in the resources that they have available. There's not many like helplines. There's not many like community counseling resources. And it's very, very sad that there are these disparities, because especially in the like Northern territories, these communities themselves are highly populated with Indigenous peoples. And it's very unfortunate that these communities are lacking these important mental health services and needs. And that's some disparity that we've realized that exists. And that's something we also want to address.
Moving forward, using their database, the team wants to work with universities and governments to fill these gaps and improve access to mental health resources nationwide.
One thing that we've realized is by kind of making a list of like resources, we can also figure out what's missing from these communities. If we have XYZ resources in this community, we also know, oh, we're missing this resource. So by figuring out these disparities, we can kind of do a study and see, oh, these different university campuses, these different cities are missing these resources. So we should be collaborating with the government, collaborating with these universities so that we can expand and make sure that these missing resources are filled in so that all students have access to all different types of resources for their mental health needs. And an example of this is like Indigenous specific resources. There are some universities that are lacking these resources. So a next step would be to reach out to these universities and say, oh, your city is lacking like Indigenous specific resources for mental health. We need to do something about this. This is a huge problem. And how can we go forward? So that's kind of the next step and next kind of vision that we have with CETL and what we plan on doing in the future.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. I think something that's important is we are trying to build that trust and that rapport with a bunch of different universities and students, because I think something that's super important is knowing that these resources are ethical and verified, and they're very accurate to these different needs. So I think, yeah, something we do want to work on in the future as well is more so building that rapport, expanding on it.
In response to feedback from students, the CETL team is also looking into adding OHIP and UHIP coverage information to make costs clearer. Once again, CETL.ca is free, no login, and already being used on multiple campuses. The team hopes it becomes a trusted tool and a catalyst for change in student mental health support. For more information, you can visit CETL.ca. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today featuring CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the week. Friday, December 19th, daytime high of 2 degrees with sun in the forecast. Saturday, December 20th, daytime high of 1, overnight low of minus 3, feeling closer to minus 8. Sunday, December 21st, daytime high of minus 1, but it's going to feel closer to minus 5, so bear that in mind. And then at the start of next week, Monday, December 22nd, high of 0, low of minus 6, but it will actually feel a little above freezing, around 2 degrees or so during the day. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Reminder that winter parking restrictions are in place as of December 1st. During December and March, overnight street parking will be banned only if the weather conditions require it. During January and February, overnight on-street parking is not permitted no matter the weather conditions. With construction season winding down, there are fewer road closures than you would typically expect. Here are three relevant road closures in the Kingston area. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess 2 Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. And Berry Street, Queen 2 Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bayridge Drive, Milford 2 Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure and intersection upgrades. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Please be aware of lane shifts, traffic speed limits, and share the lane signage. Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. The city's Toys for Tickets campaign this year saw 249 toys for a total of over $6,000 in toy value donated to Salvation Army's Toy Mountain campaign in lieu of parking tickets between November 1st and December 3rd. The total represents nearly double last year's donations, bringing the total number of toys donated since it started in 2005 to well over 4,000. Laura St. Pierre with the city's Bylaw Enforcement Services sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign. For listeners who might not know, I was wondering if you could give us a bit of an overview of what the Toys for Tickets campaign is.
Sure. So the Toys for Ticket campaign provides an opportunity for individuals who pay parking tickets in the month of November to pay for their parking ticket with a toy instead.
Awesome. And this year saw 249 toys donated, almost double last year's total. What was your team's reaction when this final tally came in?
So I think about halfway through the month, we received an update from the payment center that we were already past our previous year of 2024 and shared that with all our staff. And we were extremely excited to hear this information and sort of excited to see how many received in total.
Awesome. And do you think there's any particular reason why it was so high this year?
Yeah, so we moved to an open collection sort of model this year. So in previous years, we had only specific collection dates. So this year from November 1st to December 3rd, those who receive tickets were able to attend City Hall, and they were able to pay for their parking ticket with a toy, and this made participation easier and a lot more flexible.
And what did it mean for you and your team to see the community participate in this way?
Yeah, so I think it's it means a lot for our team, and especially how we're able to partner with the Salvation Army. And we're just able to see how much the community is able to come together and to see this increase in toys during our collection this year is something we really appreciated.
St. Pierre also says Kingstonians came through in a crucial time, with Salvation Army reporting increased need this year.
So when we dropped off the toys to Salvation Army, they did mention that they were receiving an increase this year and with individuals in need for wanting to receive sort of toys to be able to pass along to children to open up during the holiday season. So that volume has decreased. So they were appreciative of us bringing in sort of the toys from the ticket campaign this year. And that's something that they share. And in general, we also received information from the payment center that people were voluntarily bringing in toys as well. So individuals even received tickets were bringing in toys this year, which we thought was very neat, something we appreciated too.
Once again, that was Laura St. Pierre with the city's bylaw enforcement services on this year's Toys for Tickets campaign, making the holidays a little brighter for families in Kingston. This year's Kingston General Hospital Auxiliary's Teddy Bear campaign has officially kicked off. Since the annual campaign launched in 2004, it has raised more than $500,000, providing funds for new equipment for the pediatric program at Kingston Health Sciences Center. Last year, more than 300 teddy bears were delivered to young patients, and community donations brought the hospital past the midway point of its two-year, $55,000 goal for a point-of-care ultrasound machine. This year's campaign runs until December 23rd, with the goal of crossing the finish line on that two-year commitment. Chelsea Reynolds, president of the KGH Auxiliary, sat down with CFRC to chat about this year's campaign. Well, to start us off, so great to have you back. For folks who aren't familiar, I was wondering if you could give us a refresher on what the KGH Teddy Bear campaign is all about.
So the Teddy Bear campaign is something that we've been running. This is our 22nd year, and it's a fundraiser that we do, that the auxiliary runs to raise funds for pediatric care in our KGH site. The bears are available for sponsorship. It costs $100, and all the funds raised goes for equipment for pediatric units.
Mm-hmm. And this year is the second year fundraising for a point-of-care ultrasound machine in the pediatric unit. I was wondering if you could speak a bit about that goal, where we're at, how far we have to go.
Yeah, so the last year we made a two-year commitment and the cost was $55,000. Last year we raised $28,000, so we just need to get basically the same amount again. And then the ultrasound machine stays on the pediatric units, which makes it easier for the families and the patients in particular because they don't have to go somewhere. They don't have to be wheeled downstairs. They don't have to go where they're not as comfortable, they're not as familiar, and the families can stay right with them. And for the staff, it's right there on the floor. Hopefully they can get results a little bit quicker. Everyone's just a little more at ease.
And you mentioned last time we chatted, you know, that second year, sometimes it's a little harder to get that push.
Yeah.
I was wondering if you could speak to that, give some words of inspiration for the community.
Yeah. So last year when we first started talking about it, it's new and it's exciting and, oh, we have this big goal. Now this year it sort of feels like, okay, well, now we're trying to finish that off. But it's, you know, it's a great goal to think about that being in the hospital and available for use for our staff and for the benefit of our patients.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get this again, awesome piece of equipment, but I was wondering if you could also speak to that immediate impact of, you know, being able to deliver the bears at Christmas time and that kind of aspect of it.
Yeah, so the bears will get delivered, I think it's December 19th, 20th sort of thing. And so that's to any young people who are in the hospital at KGH, at Hotel Dew. We also partner with a hospital and Moose Factory, Winnebago. And so bears are delivered there. And I was actually just approached last week. I was out for a walk and a dad and two daughters came up to me, and 3 years ago, one of the daughters had been in having surgery close to Christmas, and she had received a bear, and they recognized me and said, "Are you the teddy bear lady?" And they still remembered that, and it had made such an impact on them. And she's doing well, which was lovely. So to hear that 3 years on, and she said, "Thanks again for the bear," it was really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, people are really making that immediate impact right in our community.
Yes, right? Because, I mean, nobody wants to be in the hospital ever. Nobody wants to be in the hospital at Christmas time, and especially if you're a small person. So to get that bear is just, you know, a little bit of something extra.
Mm-hmm. And for folks who are returning donors or first-time donors, how can they get involved?
The easiest way to donate is through Canada Helps. If you just look up KGH Auxiliary and then the Teddy Bear Campaign through there, that's you can direct your funds directly to that. You can also go on the KHSC website and make your way to our page. We have a form. You can fill that out. But Canada Helps is probably the easiest for people this way.
The 2025 Bears will be available for sponsorship until December 23rd and can be purchased by calling 613-549-6666, extension 6352, completing the donation brochure, or by visiting Canada Helps and selecting Teddy Bear Campaign 2025 in the donation details section. The holiday season is starting to take shape downtown, and with it comes one of the Downtown Kingston BIA's annual traditions, a new pewter ornament collection. Now in its 31st year, the series continues to document some of the city's most iconic buildings and landmarks. This year's lineup includes three new buildings, a well-loved park, and a piece marking a major local college anniversary. I spoke with Jan McDonald, Downtown Kingston's Director of Events, about this year's collection. So the collection has been part of our holiday season for over 30 years now. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the tradition and what you think makes it such a hit every year.
I know, it's kind of crazy that every year we still find buildings and these sort of cultural sort of assets in the city to make into pewter ornaments. You'd think after this is our 31st year that we would sort of run out of buildings. But no, Kingston is so historically rich that, you know, it seems like we have an endless pool to choose from. So, yeah, so we've been doing this for 31 years, five ornaments every year. We get suggestions. We have so many customers who have every single collection from year one. They get super excited whenever we would do the new release. But we get suggestions all the time, a lot of suggestions from Kingstonians, which is great. It's always a fun thing to do. I think it's really nice for locals, but then, you know, we have a lot of collections that are like Queen's buildings or, you know, nice sort of commemorative things that you can give as gifts, which is really great. So if you have, you know, kids attending Queen's, it's a nice little Christmas gift. We do things like, you know, tragically hip collections. So if you have like hip fans in your family, I think they give really well as gifts. And then it's just sort of a nice thing to sort of recognize those places in the city that have, you know, special meaning for you.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, this lineup includes a lot of iconic places in Kingston. I was wondering if you could walk us through the 2025 releases and maybe a bit about how some of them were chosen.
So this year's lineup is really wonderful. So we start out next week with the Bages Brewery, which is a beautiful building that has since been turned into condos. But it is on Wellington Street. Following that, we have Louise House. So Louise House is on Johnson Street, and it's sort of an architectural treasure. It began as a new schoolhouse for the Kingston Board of Trustees. Just a really, really beautiful building. Queen students would especially recognize this building because it is now the Starbucks on the corner of Johnson and Division. So that's the building we're talking about there. The Broom Factory is week three. So one of the main, I would say, live music venues in the city used to be a broom factory. And now, like I said, it operates as a live music venue. It also houses like the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, Crew, so lots of sort of creative brains in that building. Fourth week is McBurney Park, or more commonly known as Skeleton Park. So Skeleton Park is, definitely one of the most popular sort of gathering spaces for young families in the downtown core. They do a wonderful festival every year, Skeleton Park Arts Fest. And it has a pretty fun history. It was established in 1800s as Kingston's upper burial ground, which is sort of why it got the sort of Skeleton Park name, but very, very cool. And then finally, week five, it's sort of the ornament itself has a number of different sort of iconic emblems of the Royal Military College of Canada. So it's RC, the RMC ornament, which again, we've done a lot with Queens. We have in the past sort of touched on some of the RMC monuments, but this is sort of an all-encompassing like RMC ornament because their 150th anniversary is coming up. So that's this year's lineup.
Awesome. And I'm sure a lot of these were community suggestions, but I was wondering if any of these were like people have been asking for them like crazy and you guys were like, we have to do it this year.
Definitely. Skeleton Park, we get a lot. That one's a little bit tricky. Buildings are a little bit more simple in terms of rendering into an ornament. Skeleton Park is a very cool one because we sort of used an aerial shot to sort of fashion the ornament. But the Skeleton Park community, sort of that community, it's a very close-knit community. And so, yeah, we get a lot of suggestions for that one. And then I'm not sure how the other ones came in. I think we always look for buildings that have some kind of historical significance so that we can tell the story of the building. I do think it was someone from Queens who talked about the Starbucks building, though, because... yeah, we know it as the Starbucks, but it's kind of cool that that it started as a schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. You're also including past ornaments this year, which is a new kind of thing. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that. Yeah. What made you guys this year decide to offer that?
Yeah, so on our website, which is downtownkingston.ca, we still have ornaments available from past collections. So we definitely, popular ones go pretty quick. And so, they tend to sell out pretty fast, but it's kind of surprising going back 31 years what we still have in our catalog here. And so you can go on the website and take a look through the years. Maybe you're trying to fill in some gaps in your own collection or just kind of see what we've done historically. But those are available to purchase. They're around $8 each. And then we've put together little themed collections this year. So we have one that's a Tragically Hip themed collection. So in there, it would be the Gord Downie Pier, the Hip sign at Slush Puppy Place, things like that. We've also done one which is sort of those classic Kingston sort of buildings. When you come to Kingston, you have to see City Hall, you have to see Kingston Penn, that sort of thing. So really fun, cute little themed collections that are also available on the website.
And you also have that connection where folks bring their downtown shopping receipts. I was wondering if you could just talk about that connection to supporting local business as well.
Yeah. So the whole program started, like you said, we are a BIA, and so it's really important that we support our member businesses and try to drive business and keep downtown as lively and vibrant as we can. And so in order to purchase the new collection, so the old collections are available on our website, as I mentioned. The new collection, you have to present $25 worth of receipts from downtown. So it could be a cafe. Could be a retail shop. It could be your dentist. It could be food basics like the grocery store. So any downtown business, you present $25 worth of receipts and the ornament is $10. So, and the ornaments are available in three locations starting on Monday. So they're available at the Grand Theater box office. They're available at the Slush Puppy Place box office and the Visitor Information Center, which is across from City Hall. So you go in with your $25 worth of receipts and the ornaments are available to you at $10.
You've been listening to Jan McDonald with the Downtown Kingston BIA on this year's new pewter ornament collection. For more details on the designs and the release schedule, more information is available at downtownkingston.ca. we have a few updates directly from the city of Kingston. Kingston Transit is rolling out several service changes in the new year aimed at improving consistency and reliability across the system. Starting Monday, January 5th, passengers will see refined schedules building on the adjustments made earlier this fall. The city says these updates will help maintain service coverage throughout Kingston and restore more frequent trips on select express routes during peak hours. Highlights include Express 501-502 running every 12 minutes during weekday peaks and every 15 minutes midday, Express 701-702 returning to 15-minute peak service. Most core routes, including 1, 2, 11, 13, 14, and 3132, will stay at their current levels. Construction detours on routes 2, 6, 22, and 3132 will continue into 2026. Routes 11 and 15 will once again serve the Gardner Center, and weekday routes 16A, 16B will be discontinued after December 19th and merged into a single Route 16. Riders can preview updated maps and schedules now at kingstontransit.ca or plan trips using the Transit app. In more transit news, with the holidays approaching, Kingston Transit will shift to a modified schedule from December 22nd to January 4th. Weekdays will follow a Saturday schedule, and weekends will run on the usual Sunday schedule. A few key dates to note, December 25th and January 1st, there will be no service. On December 31st, free transit all day with late-night service on Route N1 until 3 a.m. Customer service office hours will vary, including closures on December 24th, 25th, 26th, and January 1st. Riders are encouraged to check the transit app for real-time information and trip planning throughout the holiday period. The City of Kingston says the recycling convenience drop-off depot at the Kingston Area Recycling Center will close at the end of this year. The depot located on Lappin's Lane will cease operations on January 1st due to a lack of sustainable long-term funding from Circular Materials Ontario, the provincial organization that took over Kingston's blue and gray bin programs this summer. The last day to use the drop-off depot will be on Wednesday, December 31st, from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. The city notes that all residential properties in Kingston either receive or are eligible for curbside recycling collection, which is now the primary method supported under provincial regulations. For more information about recycling programs, you can visit the city's website. The City of Kingston is exploring the creation of a municipal service corporation to manage water and wastewater services as the city prepares for significant growth. Municipal service corporations, or MSCs, are corporations established by municipalities to oversee specific services or assets. They remain fully owned by the municipality and continue to operate with public oversight. City CAO Lainey Hurdle says Kingston's growing population and aging water infrastructure are placing increasing financial pressure on the municipality. An MSC could offer more flexibility, increased revenue opportunities, and dedicated governance for water and wastewater operations. A similar model already exists for Kingston Hydro, which is owned 100% by the city. Residents are invited to read the business case and share feedback through a survey on Get Involved Kingston until January 9th, 2026. A report including public feedback will go to City Council early next year. The City of Kingston has released its 2025-26 Winter Services Response Plan, outlining supports available for people experiencing homelessness during the winter months. The plan includes information on emergency beds and overnight services, weekday and weekend daytime drop-in sites, warming centers, and street outreach and prevention diversion services. The city says the plan is designed to adapt as service needs change and as different sites adjust their status or capacity over the season. Several locations are scheduled to expand capacity later this winter. The Winter Services Response Plan will continue to be updated throughout the season. Details can be found on the city's website under Homelessness Services. Once again, those were a few messages directly from the City of Kingston.
Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Kick things off tonight with a little sparkle. Drag Bingo is taking over Carlo Estates Winery at 6 p.m. Or you can head to Trivia at Wild Wings Kingston starting at 7 p.m. On Saturday, December 20th, Saturday morning, head to Springer Market Square for the Kingston Public Market, running from 9 to 5, perfect for last-minute holiday shopping. In the afternoon, KFPL's Central Branch is hosting Vibrant Voices, a 2S LGBTQIA+ song circle and community gathering at 1 p.m. And when the sun goes down, karaoke at Time Out Bar kicks off at 9 p.m. On Sunday, you can catch A Christmas Carol performed by John D. Huston as Charles Dickens himself at the Tet Center, with shows at 1, 4, and 7. Then round off the night with not one but two karaoke options, The Merchant at 8 and The Toucan at 10:30. That wraps up your Friday forecast. If you have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar, reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming, brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by your friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present 47 Teeth's new track, Portland Flower. The song and music video are about struggling with the unknown, like wanting to take a leap of faith but not knowing if you're making the right decision, or hoping that you're letting go of the right things and won't get burned in the process. Ultimately, the song is an emotional call for guidance from the universe. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Portland Flower by 47 Teeth on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Is this my new muse? Feelings
CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st. Help us raise $25,000 to support our local arts and artists and keep our community informed with local news, concerts, and event listings on air and on our website. Visit CFRC.ca today and make your gift to Kingston's longest-running broadcaster serving our community since 1922. Get a tax receipt via Queen's University or get sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. For every $5 donated, you get one more chance to win. Thank you for your support.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a selection from Harmony Music Lounge's Origin Story Volume 2, a full-length album written, performed, and produced entirely by youth from Napanee and Kingston. From it, we'll listen to Gasoline by Brielle Banderson and Atlas Rossborough, a slow-burning alt-rock single that explores emotional overload, performed with grit and grace by two standout members of the youth band Sound Chamber, who were both in grade 9 at the time of recording. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Origin Story Volume 2 on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Gasoline here with us on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Thinking about you.
CFRC 101.9 FM has launched applications for its 2026 Airwave YGK Musicians in Residence program. Young emerging artists are invited to come create new music in our studios, perform it live on air, attend industry workshops, get paid, and get studio recordings and video to build their artistic portfolios. Applications are live now via CFRC.ca and open through December 31st. Airwave YGK Musician Residencies are made possible through the support of the City of Kingston and Kingston Arts Council. Local lives here at CFRC. Apply today so we can amplify your talent tomorrow. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present Medicine Man, the third single from The Empty's upcoming EP. The song taps into their hard rock influences for a more energetic sound than they've ever done before. Follow the band at The Empty's Music on Instagram to stay up to date for upcoming shows and their EP release. And don't forget to check out the CFRC 2025 Release Radar Listener's Choice Survey, happening now via CFRC.ca, where you can vote for your top 10 local singles and albums released in Kingston this year and enter for a chance to win great raffle prizes. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Medicine Man by The Empty's on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.